I think crime fiction, I'm pretty sure, is one of the most popular types of fiction that is sold around the world. So I think it shows that we are fascinated by the darker side of life. Margie Orford is a writer from South Africa, where the darker side of life is very much a part of the reality, not just the fiction. So the crime fiction that comes from there, I think, is something that we should perhaps be taking more notice of. Her latest book in the Clear Heart series is called Water Music. And Margie Orford, welcome to 891.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
And just over the jet lag, I hear.
Yeah, it's taken me days. I feel slightly less stupid today. So just ask me simple questions.
Indeed, indeed. Well, you have a marvellous history. I mean, you've worked as an investigative journalist and, from what I gather, seen a lot more than the average person through that role. You are now a fiction writer. You write opinion pieces. You are head of PEN?
President of PEN in South Africa. And then on the board of International PEN as well.
Yes. So you have a wide-ranging experience, and yet through everything you see and hear, you say fiction is the best way to tell the truth, or is the way that you believe is the best way to tell the truth. Why?
Well, I worked as a journalist in South Africa from when I was 18. I was a student, and I started, was in the middle of the 80s, where there was an insurrection, and the news happened. It's a curse to live in a country where history with a capital H happens, but it kind of defines your path. But I left South Africa in 1988. I was detained when I was a student in 1985, so I wrote my finals in a maximum security prison, which was a salutary experience. I was a political detainee, but I left, and then I only went back to live there in 2001. And when I got back, what struck me so profoundly was the levels of violence, interpersonal violence. And it seemed to me that the political violence that I'd grown up with and sort of written about as in the 1980s, that had been resolved on the political level with Mandela and the negotiations, this wonderful human rights constitution that we have, and the release from the horror of apartheid. But there was so much interpersonal violence. So it seemed to me that the public violence had sort of been displaced into these very personal and intimate. Yeah, and so when I got back in 2001, I mean, journalists are not complicated people. We have one question, which is why? Why is it like this? Why has this happened? So the stories I did then was really to try and get to the bottom of that. So I did a lot of investigation, especially around organized crime, corruption, the sort of militarization that had happened. And my particular interest was in violence against women. One takes it personally. As a woman. And I had three daughters as well, and I wanted to know why girls were so vulnerable in a country with a feminist constitution in many ways.
Are they more highly represented in the victims of violence? Women?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, we have, I think, the highest rape rates in the world, outside of combat zones, and often even worse than most combat zones. So it was very, very frightening and very prevalent. Also, people talked about it all the time. Mm. It's a complicated thing in South Africa. I mean, there's been a displacement of rhetoric around race, and racism has been displaced often into this fear of crime. So I needed to kind of figure it out. But what I found I could do as a journalist, you know, you get 2,000 words, 3,000 words max, to tell a story. I could list the facts, but I couldn't get to the complexity of the truth and what those facts meant. So I started to write this series, and there was no crime fiction writing in South Africa apart from a very wonderful South African crime novelist called Dion Meyer, who'd written three books, three crime novels in Afrikaans translated into English. So I wrote it not to be part of the genre, but it made sense as a way of traversing this very complex but stratified society. And as a journalist, my job trumped the color of my skin. So I could go absolutely, you can go anywhere as a journalist. Cops and journalists can go anywhere. So my main character, Claire Hart, is an investigative journalist. And I could use her as a way of doing kind of diagnostic of what the society is. Crime fiction really is about, it's a social realist form in many ways, even though the plots can be a bit outlandish sometimes. Mm. But what you can do with a crime novel is you've got 100,000 words instead of 2,000. You can get to that intricate balance, social balance, which produces the kind of violence that we have, produces the kind of crime that we have, and also look at its ripple effects, how things kind of trigger a whole lot of events. You have this flashbulb moment where you have the body or the victim, but they're all the people around that you can see. And I could look as well in my novels at the resilience that people have, the kind of solutions that people have around survival and justice and various things.
But it would be very understandable with your experience that perhaps you would look at ways to avoid continuing to look at violence. I've read where you've said you can't unhear or unsee some of the things that you've experienced, and yet you've chosen to go deeper in a way to make sense of it.
Yes, I mean, I did choose to look at it closely. I mean, it is a society in which I'm deeply implicated and complicit in what's made it my family's history, my living there. I had to understand it. And in the beginning, I thought, you know, that feeling when you're small and you go into bed. I don't know if you have this in Australia, but you're convinced that there's a monster under your bed and it will get your ankles. I thought if I shone a light on that, I would prove to myself it was just a kind of dust bunny. But once I'd started, I got drawn deeper and further into an abyss, really, of I've worked with maximum security prisoners. I did a year-long writing workshop with prisoners. I've worked with the police. I've worked in mortuaries looking at what happens. And there's something about the profession of journalism is that you have a switch in your brain, which when someone says this is your job, you go and do it. You switch off everything to do with feeling or your own trauma. And your trauma with it is only ever that of the witness, which is not the same as the person who's experienced it. So I kind of got pulled in deeper and deeper and deeper into looking at that and trying to kind of do a biography of what is in those very dark places.
And what have you learned about the nature of violence by doing this?
Well, my first book, the first book I wrote was called Like Clockwork. There it was about series of rape homicides, so serial rapes and femicide, which is very common in South Africa. And I thought the explanation might come from the victim. But, victims are... It's random who it happens to, so there was no explanation.
So that's not a race-based crime in South Africa. This is happening across the board?
Yes, or? I mean, the poorer you are, the more vulnerable you are, because poor women won't have a car, the public transport is bad, you have to walk... One way of understanding apartheid is to look at it as a racialized class system. So, but that sort of crime happens across the board. But in areas of low socioeconomic areas, you're much more likely to be a victim. Violence against women happens right across. I mean, the most famous case you will all know is Oscar Pistorius's shooting of Reeva Steenkamp, which is, I suppose, the most affluent extreme. But crimes like that happen all the time. And I wanted to understand why it happens. So I've started to unpack the layers. And South Africa, we've got our recent history of conflict and sort of undeclared civil war. And that was layered on top of a colonialism, which is a violation in and of itself. On top of that, 150 years of slavery. So you've got almost in the social DNA of South Africa systemic violence, which has become invisible to most of us. And what you do in a novel is peel back what is familiar, so familiar you don't see it, to say, okay, these are the origins, this is how it works, this is the kind of, that's the truth, I meant the kind of three-dimensional truth of the background of what happens. I worked a lot with these very violent gangsters who run the prisons in South Africa and then a lot of organized crime. And that was a revelation as well. When you look at generations of social disruption, because apartheid broke apart black families. You know, that was the point, was to destroy the social fabric. And in many ways, it was successful.
And is gang violence now in South Africa breaking apart white families as well? Or not in the same way?
No, not in the same way. I mean, the prisoners I worked with in this prison where I did a writing workshop, that there I had a mixture. I had, I think, two white men who had become members of the gangs while they were in prison. What the disruption to or the sort of damage it does in white families is drug trade, kids who get involved in those sorts of things, and then the kind of associated crimes and the sort of devastation that comes with that. But what it makes, you know, the more privileged you are, and you're much more likely to be privileged if you're white, is it makes for an unsafe society in which people are afraid for much of the time. And it keeps locked those kind of systems of separation and segregation, which kind of stop us from achieving what we could as a society when we get rid of that.
I'm talking with Margie Orford, South African crime writer, award-winning journalist, and the president of PEN in South Africa, but also a board member, I think you said, of the international PEN. Margie, can we talk about post-Mandela South Africa? We're talking about violence, and I'm just intrigued by, I guess for many of us out here in other countries, we saw Mandela come to power, released him to power, and thought, that's the end, happy fairy tale ending, when really I guess it was just the beginning. Has it gone wrong, or is it just a matter of time?
I think it's a matter of time.
As far as, you know, to things so endemically changed in South Africa during that time that, you know, will it take a lot of time to sort of get to a point where you can have social cohesion?
I think so. I think that, I mean, the transformation from before and after was like from night to day. To live in a constitutional democracy where you have freedom of expression, where you don't have arbitrary arrest, people moved out of their houses. You know, in many ways, it's a very exciting and stimulating country to live in. With the high levels of crime, it makes it really cheerful to be alive every day because you think, yesterday I didn't get shot, which is always a nice thought. But
gee, that's a low benchmark, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. At least you don't say, like some countries say, today I'm awake and I didn't die of boredom yesterday. You're never going to die of boredom in South Africa. But I think what, because this political system was so awful, anything seemed like it was going to be better. And there was a great deal of utopian thought that it would just disappear. I think, you know, as soon as you took apartheid away, everything would be fine. It's like if someone's punching you in the face, you just think, if this bastard stops hitting me,
it'll all be okay.
It'll all be okay. And then he stops hitting you and you think, I'm married to this idiot. You know what I mean? And you've got the long trauma to kind of deal with. So if you took it as if you looked at it in a psychoanalytic way, you could say it's a society with 350 years of very, very deep trauma that's never been dealt with and addressed. So much of what I see in terms of the crime that I'm interested in, I'm not interested in bank fraud and stuff. You know, we'll leave that to the English and the city and New York City. They can do that sort of stuff. This sort of psychological crime with great physical violence. To me, there's a grammar to violence. There's a logic and a sense to it, which if you try to understand it, which is what I've been trying to do, you can understand what the trauma is that it's speaking about. It's a kind of a symptom of other things. So there, I think, you know, we had the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the 1990s under Archbishop Tutu, in which we made a very valiant effort as a society to try and right the wrongs through a kind of talking cure. Mm. It hasn't worked. I mean, there's massive social divide between rich and poor, so that has stayed pretty much the same. President Zuma, who's been in office for two terms, is extremely corrupt. And that has exacerbated many of the problems. There have been insurrections on all the campuses recently. So there's a great deal of social unrest because this dream of the Rainbow Nation didn't come into being. I think time and an effort. But I think what it also needs, it's a very macho society. It's very patriarchal. Great deal of misogyny is kind of normalized. So that's something that we have tried to deal with as a society, but which is very difficult. I'm the patron of rape crisis as well. And, you know, the levels of violence against women and children is horrific. The injuries are horrific. And that, shocking as it is a symptom of a masculinity which has malfunctioned completely. And those are hard things to, they're hard things to address. Mm.
Well, if violence is at the essence of whether or not you have social cohesion, do you have hope that you will see change?
I've seen, I mean, in the time, the my lifetime, I've seen amazing changes.
Yes.
So where there has been a great deal of progress is say, in the widening of the education system, in drawing at least some people into kind of middle class or lower middle class existence, which is safer. Problems, I mean, the global problems that we share are economic crisis, falling commodity prices, great job losses from, you know, from a mining society, which mining and agriculture has lost huge numbers of jobs. So there are problems that we have which are causing instability all over the world. But the greatest hope I've seen and where I've been involved is in a very, very active civic society, sort of NGO culture, very outspoken population around issues that affect people. You know,
yes.
There's a long history in South Africa, and there's been a great deal of organization around using our constitution to ensure, for instance, that children get school textbooks, that health is made accessible and free, that housing and electricity access is made enabled by people. But that's ordinary people getting together and making the government deliver on their promises.
And is that compromised by the corruption that you talk
yes.
about in the government?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, huge. Zuma's purpose has been to stay in power. It's a system of crony capitalism, which he's kind of set in,
yeah.
which is very, has been massively detrimental to the country and put us right back, I think.
As with all of our authors, I wish I could speak to you forever. We haven't almost touched yet on the Claire Hart novels, and I would like to sort of finish with that because Water Music is the latest in the series, and it deals, as I understand it, because this is my first of your books that I've read, that through the series, Claire and...
Ridwan Faisal.
Oh, when you only read a name in another language, it's. I'm glad you said it. Anyway,
yeah, he's my
it's
lovely,
hard to know how
lovely,
to say it.
He's my lovely Muslim cop, and he... drinks whiskey, but he never eats pork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful character, as are both. But they have gone through a series of violent episodes that they're investigating, and you've made the comment that violence changes you. So how has the have the characters changed through the series, through what they've been exposed to?
What being too close to violence does to one is it something in you, you think it's a hardening, but it's actually a sort of numbing. That definitely happened to me in the work that I've done. You get a kind of vicarious post-traumatic stress with seeing too many terrible things. And it's interesting now, I've been, the series is being turned into a television series, so I've reread my own books, and I can see what happened to Claire in a way kind of mirrors what happened to me with the initial absolute shock to getting used to more and more and more terrible things so that you just take them on normally. But Claire and Ridwan, why I have them together, A, you always need a man with a gun to kind of speed the plot along sometimes.
He's a device, is he?
Yeah, he's a sexy device.
He is.
Yeah, no. He's a very nice character. But what he works with, in the police force. I'm very skeptical about the police. I didn't have a nice time at their hands as a young woman, so I was very skeptical about them. But I've worked with many cops since then, and what fascinated me about many of them is how they just get on and do their job. They put aside what they see, and I wanted to acknowledge that or kind of make that into a character, which is Ridwan Faisal. But what they deal with is so much trauma, and Claire Hart's main interest is crimes against women and children, because they're so gratuitous. They're entirely psychological crimes. It's got nothing to do with money. But they create a little space of sanctuary. They have a nice relationship. I like their relationship. It's kind of, there's a kind of warmth and a mutual respect, which is, I suppose, my way of saying that these two things coexist in South Africa. We just deal with the paradox that there are men who want to kill you, and then there are men who will actually bring you breakfast in bed.
Margie Orff, it's been wonderful to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us here
Thank
at the
you.
891 ABC Tent.